Welcome to the deep dive. We're diving into air quality today. You know, you sent over this primer 80Z AQ terminology.pdf from urbanemissions.info.
Yeah.
It's got a lot of definitions and stuff. We're going to make this way more fun than just, you know, reading a glossary. It'll be like your cheat sheet, your air quality cheat sheet.
You know, what strikes me about this document is how it doesn't just define terms, but it actually sort of shows you how they're all connected.
Oh, yeah.
Like the web that connects everything from like car exhaust to climate change.
Okay. So air quality 101, right?
Yeah.
We all kind of know that like burning things creates emissions.
Right.
But more emissions don't always equal bad air quality.
Yeah, think of it this way. The emissions are like the ingredients.
Okay.
But weather and other factors are like the chef.
I like that.
That determine how those ingredients combine to create either a delicious dish or a complete mess. And that's where understanding baselines comes in.
Baselines, okay.
Yeah.
Like baselines on the basketball court.
Not quite. So baselines in air quality are like taking a snapshot of emissions and pollution levels at a specific time. And this helps us track changes, project future scenarios, and see how different actions might impact air quality. It's like having a before and after picture.
Got you.
To see if our efforts are actually making a difference.
So if we know our baselines, then we can sort of run what-if scenarios.
Exactly.
Like what if everyone switched to electric cars?
Yeah. That brings us to a really cool connection here.
Yeah.
Air quality and climate change.
Uh-huh.
Did you know that tackling one can actually often help with the other?
Wait, really?
Yeah. The document calls this co-benefits.
Okay.
And it's a game changer. Often, the same sources that pollute the air also contribute to climate change.
Gotcha.
So by reducing emissions from things like cars and factories, we can improve both air quality and fight climate change at the same time.
Like a two-for-one deal.
It is.
Now, what about dust? I mean, it's annoying.
Yeah.
But does it really have that much of an impact on air quality?
More than you might think.
Okay.
This document highlights how dust, particularly from roads and construction, is a major contributor to something called coarse particulate matter.
Oh.
It's like tiny pieces of dirt and debris floating around in the air we breathe.
Ew, that sounds healthy.
Not at all. And here's something I bet you haven't considered. Road conditions and even like driving habits actually play a role in dust control.
Oh, interesting.
Speeding down a dirt road kicks up way more dust than like driving carefully.
So it's not just about sweeping the streets.
Wet sweeping helps.
Right.
But it's like putting a Band-Aid on a broken leg. We need to address the root causes, like improving road surfaces and encouraging responsible driving.
Okay, so we've got dust swirling around. How do we even know where all this pollution is coming from?
That's where emission inventories come in.
Okay.
Imagine a giant spreadsheet listing every single source of emissions within a specific area.
Oh.
Like a city or a region.
That sounds tedious.
It can be, but it's crucial. It's like figuring out who the main players are in the air pollution game.
Gotcha.
And here's the catch. Sometimes the biggest culprits aren't even within the area itself.
Really?
Think about pollution drifting in from neighboring regions or even across international borders.
So it's like a giant puzzle with pieces from all over the place.
Exactly. And emission inventories help us understand that big picture so we can develop effective strategies to reduce pollution.
Makes sense.
Speaking of sources, let's not forget about fires.
Oh, yeah, fires. Everything from forest fires to agricultural burning can have a huge impact on air quality.
Yeah, and this document stresses the importance of looking at land use and land cover to understand fire impacts.
Oh, okay.
For example, if an area has been deforested,
right,
it can become more susceptible to wildfires, which leads to increased air pollution.
Yeah, I've seen those satellite images of wildfires raging across entire continents.
It's scary stuff.
Yeah.
And the document actually includes a powerful visual here.
Yep.
A satellite image from VIRS, which is it's a sensor on a NASA satellite that detects heat.
Oh, wow.
And it shows all these fire hotspots. And it really highlights the scale of the problem.
Okay, so fires are a big issue, but what about greenhouse gases? We hear about those all the time in relation to climate change.
Right.
How do they tie into air quality?
Well, when we burn things, whether it's fossil fuels or wood, we release greenhouse gases like carbon dioxide. But there's also another category of pollutants called short-lived climate pollutants.
Okay.
Like black carbon.
Okay.
They don't hang around in the atmosphere as long as CO2, but they're much more potent in terms of their warming effect.
So black carbon is like a sprinter, while CO2 is a marathon runner.
Exactly. And that's why focusing on black carbon is key to achieving those co-benefits we talked about earlier.
Yeah.
By reducing black carbon emissions, we can improve air quality and slow down climate change in the short term while we work on tackling CO2 in the long run.
Makes sense. So we've got all these pollutants floating around. What's that mean for our health?
Here's the bad news. All pollutants affect our health, some more severely than others.
Okay.
Particulate matter, which we talked about earlier, can penetrate deep into our lungs and even enter our bloodstream, causing respiratory problems, cardiovascular disease, and even cancer.
Wow.
And I've heard about ozone being bad for our lungs, too.
Right.
Absolutely. And what's important to understand is that even pollutants like PM and ozone can represent contributions from other gases.
Oh, okay.
It's like a chain reaction happening in the atmosphere.
So it's not just about the individual pollutants themselves, but how they interact and create new problems.
Precisely. And unfortunately, some parts of the world are hit harder by air pollution than others. This document highlights that Asia and Africa face the highest premature death rates due to poor air quality.
Oh, wow.
It's a stark reminder of the urgency of this issue.
That's heartbreaking. So how do we even know how bad the air quality is on any given day? Is that where the air quality index, or AQI, comes in?
Yes, but the AQI can be a bit misleading. It's not an absolute measure of air quality, like, you know, right. Ruler measuring length.
How do you mean?
Think of the AQI more like a pollution health alert system. It gives you a general idea of the risk to your health based on the levels of certain pollutants in the air. The document simplifies it nicely. Green is good, red is bad.
So if I see a red AQI, I should probably stay inside.
It's a good idea, especially for sensitive groups like children, the elderly, and people with respiratory problems.
Yeah.
But even if the AQI is green, it doesn't mean the air is perfectly clean.
Right. So the AQI is a good starting point.
Yeah.
But it's important to kind of dig deeper and understand the specific pollutants and their potential impacts.
Exactly. Knowledge is power when it comes to protecting your health.
Speaking of knowledge, did you know that a shocking 10 to 20% of urban fuel is wasted just idling in traffic jams?
It's crazy, right? Yeah. And it's not just about wasted money. It's also contributing to air pollution. Imagine all those cars just sitting there, engines running, spewing out emissions.
So what can we do about that? I can't just like make traffic disappear.
Well, there are things we can do at an individual level, like turning off our engines if we're idling for more than 30 seconds. But it also requires systemic changes, like investing in better public transportation, promoting carpooling, and finding ways to reduce congestion in the first place.
That makes sense. Now I'm curious about something a bit more technical.
Okay.
The document touches upon atmospheric chemistry. Can you explain that in a way that even I can understand?
Think of the atmosphere as a giant chemistry lab. It's not as simple as emissions going in and pollution coming out. There are hundreds of chemical reactions happening all the time, influencing how pollutants are produced, transformed, and ultimately removed from the air.
Wow. That's a lot more complex than I imagine.
It is. But thankfully, scientists have developed sophisticated tools to study and understand these processes. And that brings us to a really cool innovation, low-cost sensors.
Sensors? Like the ones in my smartphone?
Similar. But these sensors are designed to measure air quality. They're cheap, portable, and easy to install, which makes them a game changer for monitoring pollution levels.
Oh, cool. So instead of relying on just a few expensive monitoring stations, we can have a network of sensors all over the place.
Exactly. And that gives us a much more detailed and granular understanding of air quality patterns. Of course, these sensors have their limitations, but with proper calibration and data analysis, they can provide valuable insights.
It's amazing how technology is being used to tackle these complex environmental challenges.
It is. And it's only going to get better. As technology advances, we'll have even more tools and data at our disposal to understand and address air pollution.
Okay, so we've got sensors collecting data, but what do we do with all that information?
That's where monitoring and modeling come in.
Okay.
Monitoring gives us the real-time data on pollution levels, while modeling uses computer simulations to predict how pollution will behave under different conditions.
So it's like having a crystal ball that shows us what the air quality might be like tomorrow or even next week.
In a way, yeah. And this information is crucial for a number of reasons. It helps us validate those emissions inventories we talked about earlier, assess the effectiveness of different mitigation strategies, and even issue public health alerts when pollution levels are high.
That sounds incredibly useful. Now, here's something that's been on my mind.
Oh, cool.
We often hear about natural sources of pollution like volcanoes and dust storms.
Right.
How do those factor into the equation?
It's important to remember that air pollution isn't solely a human-made problem. Natural sources can be significant contributors too.
Right.
But here's the catch. Sometimes human activities can amplify the impact of natural sources.
Oh, interesting. Can you give me an example?
Sure. Think about deforestation.
Okay.
When we cut down trees, it can lead to soil erosion, which in turn increases the amount of dust in the air. So a natural dust storm might be much worse if there's already a lot of dust in the air from human activities.
So it's like a double whammy.
Exactly. And that's why it's crucial to consider both natural and human-made sources when developing air quality management plans.
Okay. So we've got a good understanding of the sources and the science. But when it comes to improving air quality,
right,
where do we even begin?
Right.
There are so many different options.
The document highlights how options for air quality improvement are ranked based on two key factors, cost and health benefits. We want to find solutions that are both effective and affordable.
That makes sense. But how do we even know which solutions will have the biggest impact?
That's where cost-benefit analysis comes in. We use data from baseline monitoring, modeling, and other sources to evaluate the potential costs and benefits of different solutions. It's like comparing apples to oranges, but instead of fruits, we're comparing things like, you know, installing pollution control equipment on a factory versus promoting public transportation.
So it's not just about finding the cheapest solution, but the one that provides the best return on investment in terms of both health and economic benefits.
Exactly. And of course, financial feasibility plays a major role too. We can have the most brilliant solution in the world, but if it's not financially viable, it's not going to get implemented.
Right. That's a good point. So it's a balancing act between finding effective solutions,
yeah.
considering the cost, and making sure it's all realistic and achievable.
Precisely. And that's why air quality management requires a multifaceted approach.
Yeah.
Involving policymakers, scientists, industry leaders, and the public.
Yeah.
We all have a role to play in creating a cleaner, healthier future.
This is fascinating stuff, but we've covered so much ground already. We were talking about how complex this air quality issue is, with everything from traffic jams to dust storms.
And let's not forget about particulate matter.
Oh, yeah.
Tiny but mighty.
You know, it's easy to feel overwhelmed by all this. Like,
right.
What can I, one person, do to make a difference?
I hear you. But what I found empowering about this document
mm.
is that it actually gives some practical advice for individuals. It's not just about governments and big industries. We all have a role to play.
So what can we do? Besides, you know, turning off our engines at stoplights.
Absolutely. Mm. Think about your daily commute. Could you walk or bike instead of driving? Maybe carpool with a colleague or, you know, explore public transportation options.
I've been trying to incorporate more walking into my routine.
Yeah.
It's good for my health.
Sure.
And the environment.
Exactly. Those small changes can really add up, especially when you multiply them across an entire community. The document also highlights the importance of maintaining our vehicles.
Okay.
A well-tuned car emits fewer pollutants.
Right.
Which is good for our wallets and the air we breathe.
Okay, so transportation is a big one.
Yeah.
What else can we do around the house?
Well, you'd be surprised how much of an impact our homes have on air quality.
Oh, really?
This document highlights the importance of using clean cooking and heating fuels.
So I'm guessing that means ditching the wood-burning fireplace?
In many cases, yeah. Burning wood and coal for cooking and heating releases a lot of harmful pollutants, both indoors and outdoors.
Yeah.
Switching to cleaner options like LPG or electricity can make a huge difference, especially in densely populated areas.
Gotcha.
Where the impact is amplified.
So upgrading our appliances and making smarter choices about the fuel we use at home can really help.
It all adds up. And remember those co-benefits we discussed.
Yeah.
This is another great example. By choosing cleaner energy sources, we're not only improving air quality, but also reducing greenhouse gas emissions. Helps combat climate change. It's a win-win-win.
I love a triple win.
Who doesn't?
Now, the document also mentions this goal of zero emissions.
Right.
Is that even possible?
Well, when we talk about zero emissions, we're usually talking about eliminating emissions from burning fossil fuels, which is a huge contributor to both air pollution and climate change.
Right.
It's a long-term goal, but it's absolutely necessary if we want to create a sustainable future.
It sounds daunting, but I also find it really hopeful. Imagine a world where we've completely transitioned to clean energy sources.
What a world that would be.
Yeah.
Yeah. And the path to zero emissions requires a multifaceted approach.
Okay.
It involves things like investing in renewable energy sources, developing innovative technologies to capture and store carbon, and transitioning to more sustainable transportation systems.
So it's not just about flipping a switch.
No.
It's about transforming our entire energy infrastructure.
Exactly. It requires a collective effort from governments, businesses, and individuals all working together to achieve that common goal.
Speaking of collective effort, the document highlights that Asia and Africa face the highest premature death rates due to poor air quality. That's a sobering reminder that this issue has very real human consequences.
Yeah, it's a global problem.
Yeah.
That requires global solutions.
Right.
That's why international collaboration and knowledge sharing are so important. We need to learn from each other's successes and challenges. Work together to find solutions that, you know, work across different contexts.
I'm glad that organizations like UrbanEmissions.info are out there providing these valuable resources and information to empower people to take action.
Me too.
Knowledge is definitely power in this case.
It really is.
And I think this deep dive has provided us with a solid foundation of knowledge about air quality. We've explored the sources, the science, the health impacts,
yeah.
and even some potential solutions.
And you know what? One thing that really stood out to me was the emphasis on data quality.
Oh, yeah. The importance of QAQC.
Yeah.
Can you explain that in plain English? I'm not a scientist.
Sure. It basically means making sure the data we're collecting and using to make decisions is accurate, reliable, and trustworthy. Think of it like this. If you're baking a cake and you use the wrong measurements, the cake won't turn out right.
Yeah.
Same principle applies to air quality management. If we're using bad data, our decisions and actions won't be effective.
So it's not just about collecting data. It's about making sure that data is high quality.
Exactly. And that involves things like using calibrated instruments, following proper sampling procedures, and having rigorous data validation processes in place.
I imagine this is especially important when it comes to things like emissions inventories and air quality monitoring.
Absolutely. We need to be confident in the data we're using to understand the sources of pollution,
right?
Track trends over time, and evaluate the effectiveness of different interventions.
So data quality is like the foundation of effective air quality management.
I'd say so. Without good data, we're essentially flying blind.
And that brings us to another key point, the importance of transparency and open data. The document argues that the public has a right to know about the quality of the air we breathe.
Yes.
And the sources of pollution that are impacting our health.
I couldn't agree more. Open data empowers individuals and communities to hold polluters accountable, advocate for change, and make informed decisions about their health and well-being.
It's like shining a light on the problem and making sure everyone has access to the information they need to take action.
Exactly. And that's why organizations like UrbanEmissions.info are so valuable. They're working to make air quality data more accessible and understandable to everyone.
I'm so glad we took this deep dive. It's been incredibly informative and empowering.
Yeah.
But you know, one thing that really stood out to me was that idea of individual action.
I'm all about individual action.
Yeah.
It's easy to feel like our individual choices don't matter.
Right.
But they really do. When enough people make small changes, it can create a ripple effect that leads to bigger systemic changes.
So what are some simple things people can do to reduce their impact on air quality?
Well, we've already talked about transportation,
right?
But there are so many other things we can do. For example, we can reduce our energy consumption at home by turning off lights when we leave a room, unplugging electronics when we're not using them, and washing clothes in cold water.
I've also heard that planting trees can help improve air quality. Is that true?
Absolutely. Trees are like natural air purifiers. They absorb carbon dioxide and other pollutants from the air and release oxygen. Plus, they provide shade, which can help reduce the urban heat island effect, which is another contributor to air pollution.
So planting a tree is like a gift to yourself and the planet?
Exactly. And it doesn't have to be a big grand gesture. Even planting a small tree in your backyard or on your balcony can make a difference.
Okay, so we've got transportation, energy efficiency, and tree planting.
Yeah.
What about waste management? I know that burning trash is a big problem in some parts of the world.
It is. And it releases a whole cocktail of harmful pollutants into the air. The document emphasizes the importance of proper waste management systems,
right,
including recycling, composting, and the safe disposal of hazardous materials.
I'm definitely guilty of not recycling as much as I could.
Yeah.
I'm going to try and do better.
Every little bit helps. And remember, advocacy is another powerful tool. We can support policies and initiatives that promote cleaner air, hold our elected officials accountable, and even encourage businesses to adopt more sustainable practices.
So it's about using our voices and our votes to create change at a larger scale.
Precisely. And don't underestimate the power of raising awareness.
Yeah.
Talk to your friends and family about air quality, share information on social media, and be a vocal advocate for clean air in your community.
This conversation has been so inspiring. It's shown me that we all have the power to make a difference, even in small ways.
Absolutely.
We've been exploring this intricate world of air quality, and honestly, this document has been amazing.
Yeah, it's like a roadmap, isn't it?
Totally.
To understanding not just the problems, but the solutions.
Mm-hmm.
And I find that really exciting.
You know, earlier we talked about source apportionment, like that detective work of figuring out where the pollution is coming from. Can we unpack that a little more?
Absolutely. It's like pollution fingerprint analysis.
Mm-hmm.
Imagine being able to pinpoint whether the smog hanging over your city is mainly from traffic or industrial emissions or something else.
So it's not just about saying, hey, the air is bad. It's about understanding the specific culprits.
Exactly. That's how you develop targeted and effective solutions.
Mm-hmm.
The document mentions XRF,
right,
which sounds super technical, but it's basically a way to analyze the chemical makeup of pollutants and trace them back to their source.
Oh, wow. So if we know that, say, most of the particulate matter in a certain area is coming from a coal-fired power plant nearby, we can focus on reducing emissions from that specific source.
Exactly. Data-driven decision-making. The document also talks about using gridded emissions and meteorological data. It's like creating a high-resolution map of pollution sources and how they're moved by wind and weather.
This is really fascinating stuff, but I have to admit, sometimes the scale of the problem feels overwhelming.
Yeah.
What would you say are some of the biggest challenges we face in getting to cleaner air?
Well, for one, air pollution doesn't respect borders, right?
Right.
It's a global issue that needs global cooperation. We can't just focus on cleaning up our own backyard.
It's like trying to clean up a river when everyone upstream is still dumping their waste in it.
Exactly. Another challenge is how air quality is tied to other issues.
Yeah.
Climate change, economic development, social equity. It's not just about technical solutions. It's about addressing all these interconnected challenges in a holistic way.
So it's about finding solutions that actually benefit everyone, not just a select few.
Absolutely. Everyone deserves clean air, regardless of income, race, or location. And that means addressing the root causes of air pollution, like poverty, inequality, and just unsustainable consumption patterns.
It sounds like a big task, but I'm also hearing some optimism. What gives you hope when you think about tackling this problem?
Well, we've already made some real progress in reducing air pollution in many parts of the world. Think about the improvements in cities like Los Angeles or London over the past few decades.
That's true. I remember reading about how London used to be called the Big Smoke.
Exactly.
Because of its smog.
Right. And now it's known for its parks and cleaner air.
Yeah.
And those changes didn't just happen. They were because of strong policies, technology, and public awareness.
Mm-hmm.
And those same things are driving change today across the globe.
Okay. That's encouraging. But what about the parts of the world where air pollution is still a big problem, like in some developing countries?
Well, that's where knowledge sharing is key. We need to help these countries learn from past mistakes.
Yeah.
And leapfrog to cleaner technologies. And, you know, organizations like urbanmissions.info are a vital part of this.
So it's about sharing best practices and empowering local communities to take charge.
Exactly. And that's where individual action is so important.
Right.
Even small changes in our own lives can have a big impact, inspire others, and create momentum for change on a larger scale.
Wow, this whole conversation has been such a journey. We went from defining basic terms to like complex scientific concepts to global solutions. I think one of the biggest takeaways for me is realizing that we're not just passengers on this planet.
No.
We are active participants in shaping its future.
Couldn't agree more. And this document has given us a real toolkit, I think,
yeah,
to understand this problem and take action.
Okay, so as we wrap up, I want to leave our listeners with one final thought.
Okay.
Given everything we've learned, what is one concrete action you are personally going to take to improve air quality in your own life?
I'm recommitting to walking and biking more, not just for my health, but as a reminder to others that cleaner transportation choices are possible and fun. What about you?
You know what? I'm inspired to learn more about air quality in my own community.
Yeah.
And find ways to advocate for better policies. And I encourage everyone listening to do the same.
Awesome. It's been a pleasure diving deep with you.
Thank you for joining us. And remember, knowledge is power. And together we can create a world where everyone can breathe freely.